I was so convinced that Luna was the future of money and that this thing could never depeg, that over 50% of my portfolio was in Luna and Luna related projects. Long story short, I mean, Luna collapsed, as you know. I lost everything that I had in Luna. My dry powder, which was my stables, were in UST. And that was pretty much 4 days. In 4 days, I lost over $130 million of my own money. And I was completely helpless. There was nothing I could do about it because my Luna was staked.
Steady lads.
How do you wake up and get out of bed the next day?
I woke up in the morning and I put my phone on. And the first thing I used to do is go to CoinGecko and scroll down from the top down, from Bitcoin down. And Luna was always like number six or number seven. And I'll never forget looking at the phone and like scrolling down, and it wasn't number six, and it wasn't number seven, and it wasn't number eight, and it wasn't number nine, and it wasn't number 10. I was like, and then the realization hits you that actually it's at zero.
Everybody, to another episode of Steady Lads. I'm Jordi, the founder of Cellini Capital. We have with us Taiki, full-time researcher, humble farmer. And of course, Justin is here, CEO of Astaria. And instead of Thicky, we have an equally degen guest, Ran. Good to have you with us. How are you doing?
I'm glad you pair me with Thicky as the equally degen and not as the conservative one here.
Yeah, I mean, we'll get into it. Like, you guys are really, in the weeds and so many things happening in the space. And you were just saying that you've done like four shows today and you're so deep into it. It's going to be cool to get your thoughts on not just the space, but also, I guess, running a media sort of conglomerate, I guess.
Yeah, we've built quite a big business in a very short period of time. I'm glad to talk about it.
Absolutely. Yeah. So for our audience who's not familiar, Ran is the host of Crypto Banter. It's one of the larger YouTube crypto shows and has a lot of different kind of content like guests and like sort of deep dives. How long have you been doing it for now?
So I started with CNBC. I actually started the world's first televised crypto show, and that was in 2017. So I hosted a CNBC show up until COVID. And COVID, we stopped because the idea of broadcasting from a house with three kids in an apartment in New York just didn't sound like a good idea. Also, CNBC and crypto didn't really gel. They liked the idea of talking about crypto, but it's a very bureaucratic organization. And they were getting, all the crypto scams were happening at the time and people were pretending to be me, and the lawyers didn't even know how to deal with stuff like this. So, I decided to go on my own. We then started Crypto Banter. And really the reason why I started Crypto Banter is because what I realized when I was at CNBC is I was forced to research every day because I never knew what guests were going to talk to me about. And I had to make sure that I knew everything. And then when I started Crypto Banter, the reason why I did it was because I had to force myself to research every single day. And the only way that I could force myself to research every single day was if I knew that for 1 hour a day, I would have to host a show. And that forced me to research every day until 4 o'clock. And then at 4 o'clock to 5 o'clock, I would do a show. And as I researched more and more, I realized that I was becoming smarter and smarter. And because I was broadcasting what I was doing, I was actually making people wealthier. And so started building a huge following of people who were making wealthier. And then we realized that actually we have a superpower, and our superpower in an illiquid market with asymmetric information was that we could actually build the most profitable community in the world by just sharing what we learn every single day and what we're doing about it. As I say, I don't think we're geniuses. I just think that we spend the time and effort and money researching, and then we take action. And because this market is so young and there's so much information asymmetry, if you have more information than anybody else, you probably got an advantage.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to get into that later on in the show. And I'm kind of curious your thoughts on the responsibility that comes with being, potentially market moving with things you say. And it's obviously something that a lot of crypto Twitter personalities have to deal with as well. You see Hasaka tweeting and then the market is going to fly off automatically. But let's get started with, last week, you and I were both in Dubai. So that it was quite an eventful Dubai trip there. And I don't know what the highlight for you was. I think the highlight for me, apart from the water world 2.0 that we lived through, was I got called in like 5 minutes before there was supposed to be a panel on meme coins. And I think the moderator was like stuck in traffic. And I got called on stage, like no preparation, to talk to Ansem and Haseeb about meme coins, basically. And what did you think of that panel? I think you caught that one.
Yeah, I was there. I listened to it, obviously. I think it was, actually, if you hadn't told me the story that you were called in last minute, I would have thought that you were well prepped, because I think you were well suited. It was actually one of my favorite panels at the conference. I think the highlight for me of the week was, I mean, I enjoyed the whole week, first of all. The energy, the number of crypto people, the number of side events, the sheer Dubai crypto ecosystem is just becoming unreal. But the highlight for me of the week was seeing how Dubai managed to react to a natural disaster. Because, I mean, not many people see it as a natural disaster, but if you drove in the streets, there were cars floating. Dubai is not built for rain at all. I mean, there's no gutters on the side of the road at all, or very little, very few gutters, and they were faced with a lot of rain. And the highlight for me was seeing how quickly a country could deal with a mess and within 3 days get back to business as usual and be completely clean. And so to me, it showed a big difference between that and the USA, where everything is a negotiation and like Dubai just gets shit done. And that's, I think, the mentality that was a highlight for me is, I mean, I hated the rains. I hated getting liquidated. But I loved watching how quickly they fixed shit up.
There's also a lot of interest in Bitcoin in the area from my discussions on the ground there. Some people are already in. I imagine that it will be like one of the great hotspots for growth of crypto. But yeah, before that, we had the fight on Friday night. This was the boxing fight. Six-figure people watch this stuff live. I was pretty impressed with like the figures that they get for the crypto fight night. And I think apart from the bets being made, there was also the perpetual on Whiff. And for the audience who doesn't know, so Ansem, who was, you know, fighting, I just mentioned, he's a big proponent of Dog with Hat. And he had kind of discussed on the panel that he was aware that, you know, his winning or losing was going to affect the price of Whiff. And unfortunately, things didn't go great for him on the fight. We can pull up a quick clip of some of what was happening there.
I think things didn't go well for him is an understatement, but I mean, you take your pick.
Yeah, just go ahead. So, you know, there were a bunch of people on their phone trading perpetuals and trying to get the inside information, just like when you have a tennis match and somebody's in the stands and they see that the ball's going in or going out, they're trying to like furiously bet. And I think it did go down like 3-4% that day. But the market still recovered, and I think meme coins are still looking decent. Justin, maybe let's bring up some of the market action right now for the top coins.
I mean, the biggest narrative this year so far has been meme coins. The most trading, the most returns, obviously, because they start from close to zero, but the most trading, the most interest has all been meme coins. And if you look at transactions on chain, the biggest percentage of chain transactions currently is meme coins. So, I mean, it's here and it seems like it's here to stay. There was also an article about written by Bloomberg this week where funds are starting to buy meme coins. Like, you know, funds are starting to buy Dog with Hat, which is because they want the returns. So I don't think we can ignore the narrative anymore.
Do you think this is a good thing, a bad thing, or neutral for the space?
I think that anything that brings users into crypto is a good thing, number one. And that's the first reason why I think that meme coins are great. Well, let's maybe start off and say when meme coins started, I said they were a distraction and you should avoid them at all costs. But then I remember that when NFT started and CryptoKitties started and people were paying exorbitant amounts of fees to buy CryptoKitties, I remember that I had the same reaction. So then I reconciled my reaction. And I said, hold on a second. What if this is the same thing? And then I had a complete change of heart where what I realized was that Memecoin is a cultural prediction market. And that all it is to see, it's a fun game of cultural predictions. And it has replaced NFTs. It's Camilla Russo tweeted a tweet and she said, it's a more democratic version of NFTs because you can be part of a community without being told. You know, the problem with an NFT is if you can't afford the NFT, then you're out, right? And so you're out of the community. So it's a very exclusive community. The thing with a meme coin is it's a very inclusive community, whereas anyone can get in anytime that they want. So now you've got an inclusive community and you've got probably the most fun game in the world. I'm loving trading memes, especially with all the sideways action.
Yeah, it's quite relevant because there's been a lot of talk about this. There's a tweet by the CTO of A16Z that it's kind of taking the other side and kind of you can see the battle lines forming between the fundamentalists and the people that are sort of following the culture and trying to see, you know, what comes out of it. So, the CTO says meme coins alter how the public and regulators and entrepreneurs see crypto. At best, it's a risky casino, but it affects adoption, regulation, and undermines the vision of why we're all in the space, et cetera, et cetera. So the guy responding, of course, says, sounds like he missed Bowden.
But I mean, let's just talk about a risky casino. Exchanges are also very risky casinos, and the exchanges that make the most money are the leverage exchanges, which are at best risky casinos. And to be honest, I know that all four of us call ourselves investors, but actually we're here for the risky casino. And I mean, yes, we're betting on technology, but we're betting on the most risky technology in the world, which is a risky casino. So, you know, this is just a derivative of the risky casino. Crypto appeals to a certain type of person, which is someone who loves taking risks and likes taking bets. And the more applications that you can get into this risky casino, the better. And meme coins is a risky casino, and that's what it is. Just know, play it for what it is.
I think I have to disagree. I don't think, you know, like if the person that buys Bitcoin or Ethereum or is like investing in different types of technologies being built are necessarily investing in just the next casino. Of course, there's, you know, these are risky assets. All venture is risky. 90% plus of startups fail. But I do think it's like a faulty comparison to compare the meme coins to project tokens or other major cryptocurrencies.
We just take a step and say, let's just remove the top 50 currencies. So let's remove Bitcoin, Ethereum, BNB, Solana, etc. And tell me what the difference is between a project in the bottom 50 and a meme coin in terms of risk. Like, what's the risk differential? In terms of really being able to gain network effect, I would probably argue that a meme coin could probably get more network effect. And the ability to build something, okay, well, you know, that's, to be honest, a flip of a coin. I think we all know that because we've all invested in multiple IDOs that have promised us the world and delivered nothing. So at least with meme coins, you know exactly what you're getting. You're getting nothing, and it's a cultural casino.
Yeah, and that's interesting with like the whole network effects, because, you know, Elon talks about Doge being the currency of the people. Shiba just raised $12 million to build their own L2. And I think
it's an L3, I think.
Or L3, but like whatever, right? But it's like, I feel like meme coins pumping is a phenomenon, as a byproduct of all these infrastructure projects being funded by A16Z that doesn't really do anything.
Can I interject and just say, I think that if you want to argue what crypto actually is, to me, crypto is a mix of two things. It is a mix of technology, let's say three things, technology, community, and casino, right? Like, it's, if you want to like really break crypto down into its fundamentals, you're going to say it's community, technology, and then dopamine casino. So let's look at what meme coins actually do. Meme coins create community first, and they have casino. They score 100% on casino. They create community first, and then they can actually pivot into technology. Let me give you a few examples. Doge started off as casino with community around a dog, but has now become a play on whether a financial technology is going to be integrated into Twitter, right? That's what Doge is. Doge is not about a cute dog anymore. It's an option on a technology that's going to be integrated into Twitter. Then you have like Bonk, and it started off as Bonk, and then it became BonkBot, and now it's an integration. You know, meme coins are just an entry point which tick two or three boxes in crypto, and then they just got to get the third. The other side of the coin is that you've got these amazing technologies, but they don't have community, and therefore they can't create casino, and therefore they fail. So you got to kind of look at it for the whole picture of what it is.
So last episode, you know, I was rambling and talking about how crypto is all about being early and everyone's just trying to be early and trying to figure out if they're early. I got a lot of comments, and a lot of people have told me that they've changed their entire behavior and their entire sort of like investing approach based on that sort of like ramble I had. And actually, like this kind of ties in perfectly, because you see on the one hand the VCs that, you know, they're sort of presenting it as we're serious investors and these guys are just gambling. But it does remind me a little bit of Wall Street sort of revolution, right? Like people just saying like, we're tired of buying your regurgitated bags and we just want to try to be early. The sad reality is they're still not really early most of the time on meme coins, because either there's sniper bots or there's like all these other things that there's always insiders, right? So the hit rate on these lottery tickets is still quite low.
I had like one question for Ryan. So obviously you have one of the biggest channels out there, and I think that gives you a glimpse into, I guess, certain social metrics, maybe types of videos that people are clicking, types of videos people are not clicking. And you do live streams, so I'm sure you get like, you know, random ticker shield in the comment section. Like, do you think retail is back? Because there's always been this conversation around like Bitcoin's all-time highs, retail. I mean, like how does the social metrics compare now versus, let's say, 4 years ago or 3 years ago?
So actually, to be honest, we actually studied this quite accurately. And what I mean by studied quite accurately, we have spreadsheets that really show our views. I just want to maybe even just give you an idea of how well we've copied this. I don't know if you'll allow me to just share my screen. So this is just one of the reports that I get on a minute by minute basis. I don't know if you can just pop up my screen there. So literally, I know the size of my waiting rooms for every show from the minute I put the show up, and I know how it increases minute by minute, and I can compare it to every other show that we ever do. So I know from the beginning whether my thumbnail is the correct thumbnail or not the correct thumbnail. I know how many viewers I have the second that I go live, and then I index myself against other channels because I want to see that it's me, not the tide, so to speak, right? And then, as you can see, I'm monitoring my views every hour relative to other shows. And as you can see, today's show, 5 hours after the show, is on 51,000. It's better than yesterday, but it's not as good as the day before. So I kind of know where I'm going to finish. So what I'm trying to show you is we actually really, really, really take a scientific data approach. And I can tell you the following things. Number one, retail is not here. Based on the number of people that used to watch my show in the last bull market, based on the number of comments per minute that I used to get on a show, based on the number of tickers that I'm being shilled in the comments, retail ain't here yet. It's not even close to halfway. Let's put it that way.
Do you think they have to come, or like, you know, it's the same people that got burnt a couple of years ago and their memories might not be that short. So it might be a while.
So there's a human phenomena, you know, like when a woman gives birth to a child and then she says, I'll never do this ever again. And then a year later, she's pregnant again and she's smiling about it. You know, that is actually a human condition. And the human condition is that humans tend to forget trauma quite quickly, not trauma, but you know what I'm saying? They tend to forget really quickly. So I think that they will come back because people in the greed will be bigger than the feeling that the memory of the loss that they have, if you know what I'm saying. They'll come back to the casino. It's like, it's the same reason why addicts keep walking back to the casino.
Have you thought about what will bring them back? We've talked a lot about this on the show. Is it price going up? Is it meme coins? Is it new innovation? Like what do you think?
My theory around this is that the institutional tap on Bitcoin will need to turn on properly. I think that the inflows that we've had into the ETFs, we've had flow one, flow one with the institutional early adopters. I don't think we've had real institutional inflow via the ETF. Like, if you're going to tell me that 4.5% of Bitcoin's circulating supply is all the institutions were after, and I know this week we had a day where the institutional inflows were zero, or the BlackRock was zero. So everyone's like, okay, maybe this is the end of the institutions coming into Bitcoin. I don't believe that's going to happen. I believe that this is the beginning of a long, slow bull market for Bitcoin, where, you know, people are going to say, oh, just allocate 1% of our portfolio to Bitcoin. And it's going to, like, we haven't even seen the beginning of that with the real funds. Now, it could happen now. It could happen in the next 6 months. I don't have a timeline. But I think eventually the price of Bitcoin goes up so much that people just want to take, people like us just take a little bit of our Bitcoin profits and just say, you know what, let's just speculate onto something that could be the next Bitcoin, which is what's happened in every other bull market. Like if you think about the old bull markets, you had Bitcoin, and then we took some of our profits and put them into Ethereum, and some of those profits we put into ICOs. That money came from our Bitcoin stack, and that was because someone was willing to pay a lot for our Bitcoin stack. So I think the same cycle follows. So I think as soon as the real institutional cycle follows for Bitcoin and the price of Bitcoin really peaks and the dominance goes to 60 or 65%, and then eventually we all look at this and say, okay, listen, Bitcoin's had a run. There's no more steam in this casino. Let's go into the other casinos. That's when the real fun starts.
And you know, the other casinos could be, like you said, meme coins could be technically interesting projects. So the the comment from A16Z was meme coins are not technically interesting. So some people want that type of project. And then there was a funny response. I think we can bring up Kenny here is saying, hey, was ApeCoin technically interesting? And there's a screenshot of Andreessen, you know, putting like endless money into ApeCoin. So a little bit of call out there on do as I do, not as I say. And one of the things that caught my eye this week was WorldCoin is publicly announcing that they will be dumping their token, as opposed to, you know, usually it's done behind closed doors and OTC deals and all this stuff. Respect to the WorldCoin and World Assets, I guess, which is their subsidiary. Just warning people that, you know, they are going to be selling it. I think it's like $1 million a week or so is what they've said, between 0.5 and 1.5. I'm sorry, not dollars, WLD. So it's five times as much. So $2.5 to $7.5 million a week on average. They do this like stupid thing where they compare it to the current weekly volume. Obviously, like that's never like a good comparison because, you know, that's not the real number to look at. There can be a lot of wash trading back and forth. It doesn't mean that the market can absorb a certain percentage of volume. But, you know, kudos to these guys for doing it out in the open. Yeah, I'm not sure how I feel about this. I was kind of surprised to see this headline. Anybody have any reactions to this?
I mean, can we maybe just take a step back and just gauge how we all feel about WorldCoin? 90 billion, what's the latest market cap? I mean,
I think it's like 50 now.
Yeah, down to 50.
You have $50 billion market cap, 1 billion in circulation. So, you know, 1/50th in circulation. So 2% of the tokens are in circulation at the moment. The rest are controlled by a one-person foundation, the Sam Altman Foundation. I mean, you know, like, I don't know if anything surprises me about this coin anymore.
I mean, they're doing what they should be doing, right? Like, if this was a stock, if this was Wall Street, like, if your company is overvalued, you issue new shares. If it's undervalued, you do buybacks, right? And this thing is worth 50, the FTV is 50 billion. Like, they're doing what they should be doing to fund future operations. I mean, the model is certainly quite predatory just because of the low float, but I'm not surprised. And, you know, it is good that they're at least doing this more in open versus some other projects, which are certainly less transparent.
Justin, the CEO, his role is playing out. He's thinking about it from the managerial perspective. Taiki, what's the researcher perspective?
Whenever I talk to AI experts in crypto, they view that like WorldCoin as a Sam Altman meme coin. And the idea, the bull case of WorldCoin is that with, I guess, ChatGPT AI, there's going to be a lot of discussions around, you know, the realness of users, like maybe fake voter data, etc. And to hedge against those arguments, Sam Altman is creating WorldCoin, and you know, he's trying to create a digital ID, you know, a proof of humanhood. And in order for this vision to realize, in order for him to make this argument, he needs to pump WorldCoin. So that's kind of like the bull case for WorldCoin. Like Sam Altman is going to pump it. It's reflexive. Where
what's like the fair market valuation of OpenAI?
Let's call it 100.
Yeah, 80 to 100.
But that was with Microsoft, which is strategic investor. So it's probably like 200, let's say.
Okay, and the coin is worth 50 billion. It was at 100 billion a week ago or 2 weeks ago. I don't know.
Have you scanned your eyeballs, Rand? I think I might be the only one here that's actually done it. You have?
I've done it. I did it because I was doing a video at a conference and they were scanning eyeballs at a conference. And I figured, let me just check how this thing works. I'm also not one of these guys that's like, oh my goodness, how could you scan your eyeballs? I understand exactly how they store it. And I also understand that every morning when I do this and unclick my phone, they're getting much more than my eyeball. And that's going directly into the grubby paws of Apple. So I'm not one of these people that's like against.
Also in the US, there's like facial recognition for TSA now. Instead of, you know, scanning your boarding pass or scanning your ID, they scan your face. Like this, it's already out there. You might as well get the WorldCoin airdrop and scan your eyeballs.
And buy some goats.
I think it's a big vision. And I think that if they execute well, you know, I have a lot of respect for a VC called Jake Bruckman. He's a guy that's like, he's a good VC. He's been there. And he actually came onto one of my shows and he said that, I said to him, what's your favorite token? He said, WorldCoin. I was like, and then it was at a $90 billion valuation. And I'm like, what? And he said, well, if you think about what Bitcoin is a monetary network that we hope will expand into the whole world. And WorldCoin is a derivative of that because they're trying to get it, you know, they keep dropping coins into the hands of people, and eventually it will become a huge monetary network. Now, I don't buy that thesis, but you have to respect that they're very good VCs that actually do buy that thesis.
I mean, I said this on our first ever show, or maybe second ever show, that WorldCoin is trying to be money. It's trying to actually be like base money by distributing it through this like free way. I think, you know, it's very, very hard to do those things, and it's out of the reach of technology. It's more of a social construct. But from a trader perspective, when I saw this news, I brought up the chart. I expected to be like a big nuke. It has gone down like a little bit, but it's not been as sudden as a front run. And I feel like the market's learning. Like, you cannot front run these things easily, because if you want to short, you have to short perpetuals. And as I've talked about many times, the funding rate can go negative on you. And it actually did in this case go negative quite quickly on certain exchanges. So it goes to show that, yeah, like maybe this thing bleeds down over the next months as they sort of sell 5 million a week. But even if you get the direction right, let's say it goes from 5 to 4 or 5 to 3 even, you might pay that all in funding if you're short. So there is no free lunch. Don't try to, trade the news on the short side.
One question I had for Jordy, because I think in the first or second episode, you said that WorldCoin could become this cycle's Luna, where it just gets massively inflated and it like kind of just goes down 99% or something. Do you still see that playing out, or has your thesis changed on that?
It hasn't like shown yet that it's in the public perception. Apart from the guy that we show every week that's buying more and more goats. There don't seem to be like endless people right now, you know, using WorldCoin as their currency to buy their animals. So I haven't seen, like, my probability of it is still, you know, whatever it was back then, like 5%. It's still quite low. I think the thing that ends cycles is the same thing that always ends cycles, which is impairment of balance sheets and people thinking they have money, realizing they don't have it, that they thought they had it. That's always like the disconnect. And that could very well happen with meme coins. If meme coins get to hundreds of billions and people think, you know, I've seen people with millions and millions of dollars with WIF that just refuse to sell. And it's a large part of their net worth. And they're just like, no, this thing is going to $10. I'm like, well, it's a 3.5. Like, you want to just keep going for another 3X? Like, seems irresponsible, but people are very emotionally attached to these things. And ultimately, if we get a super cycle in meme coins, as we saw last episode, there is sometimes no bid when the nuke happens.
I mean, you talk about these people. I was these people in the last cycle. I mean, it's a pretty public knowledge.
You were. Actually, like, I would love to talk about this. This is one of the topics I wanted to talk to you about, Rand. But I mean, you had a huge percentage publicly of your net worth in Luna. And obviously, like, that, yeah.
I'll be very honest. I got caught up in the hype. I made some very bad mistakes. I was one of the original investors in Luna before the ICO. I met them in Korea in the Hashed Accelerator. I wrote them a $150,000 check at the onset. And then I carried on buying tokens on the market when there was a slump. And I mean, my average entry price was like 40 cents or something, like under 40 cents. And when the thing got to $100, I was so convinced, $130, $140, whatever it was, I was so convinced that Luna was the future of money and that this thing could never depeg, that over 50% of my portfolio was in Luna and Luna-related projects. And on top of that, my dry powder, so I learned a lot of lessons, but number one, landed up being publicly that over 50% of my portfolio was in Luna. And I even remember doing a show about 2 weeks before Luna collapsed with Scott Melker and a couple others. And I said, guys, over 50% of my portfolio is in Luna. And Scott Melker said, sell it. And I said, into what? I can't find anything that shows as much promise. And he just put into Bitcoin. And I was like, Bitcoin is so boring compared to Luna. Why would I do that? Long story short, I mean, Luna collapsed, as you know. I lost everything that I had in Luna. My dry powder, which was my stables, were in UST, earning 20% on Anchor. And so my dry powder had gone. And that was pretty much 4 days. 4 days I lost. I think that my story is one of the worst stories in the whole world. And only because maybe I lived it. But in 4 days, I lost over $130 million of my own money. And I was completely helpless. There was nothing I could do about it because my Luna was staked.
How do you wake up and get out of bed the next day?
I'll tell you the story because it's actually like, so first of all, it depegged on the weekend before slightly. And my trader said to me, do we trade out of all our UST? And I said, don't worry. They got $3 billion worth of Bitcoin. Very soon, Do Kwon will just sell some Bitcoin and push it back up to a dollar, which he did.
Steady lads.
When it went back to a dollar, my trader phoned me. He said, it's at a dollar. Let's get the fuck out. And I said to him, no, it's staying at a dollar. Don't worry. Everything's fine. And then it depegged again. And then I was like, don't worry. Don't sell. Everything's fine. Do Kwon's going to put more money into it. And then it did repeg again. And he said, let's get out. And I said to him, it's fine. Can't you see it's happened twice and it's repegged. Don't worry about it. And then the next morning, I'll tell you the story. This is probably the worst day of my life. I woke up in the morning to go. The first thing I do in the morning, I go to the toilet, obviously. And I put my phone on. And the first thing I used to do is go to CoinGecko and scroll down from the top down, from Bitcoin down. And Luna was always like number six or number seven. And I'll never forget. Now, I wear contacts. So in the morning, I don't really see very well until I get my contacts in. And I'll never forget looking at the phone and like scrolling down. And it wasn't number six. And it wasn't number seven. And it wasn't number eight. And it wasn't number nine. And it wasn't number 10. I was like, fuck. And then the realization hits you that actually, it's at zero. It wasn't a zero. It was about like $6 or $7. And then you're like, you know, it's carnage. Like you get, the first thing you do is you get onto Twitter and every tweet's about Luna and the DPEG. And then I'm just thinking to myself, fuck, that's half the portfolio gone. That's like, and I didn't yet click that the dry powder had gone because I, you know, like first you, what your first thought is the money's gone. And then you're like, oh shit, we don't have any more dry powder. The dry powder is worth 9 cents on the dollar now. And then you realize you're completely wrecked because all our stables were on UST, like barring like some shit that we were farming, all our stables were in UST. And then as a nice aftershock, you realize that the stuff that wasn't invested in Luna and in UST was actually invested in Luna ecosystem projects. So like, you know, the metaverse building on Luna and the liquidation engine building on Luna and the whales, all these tokens. And then you realize that over 60% of your portfolio got wiped out. And then I was faced with a choice in life. First of all, it was the most depressing 4 days of my life. I can't even explain to you. Like, you feel like there's no blood flow to your face. I felt like I was walking dead. Like, I was alive, but I had no emotion. You could slap me across the face, I would have felt nothing. But I made shows. I carry on making shows every day because that's a commitment that I made to myself. And that was almost like psychology. It's like, I let it all out and I spoke about it and I spoke about it again and I spoke about it again. And then the time came in my life to make a decision, tap out. And I was very close to tapping out, to be honest. I was like, I hate this game. I don't want to rebuild again. It took me so long to build such a big portfolio. I don't want to rebuild again. Or go into what I call beast mode. And beast mode meant that you have to rebuild like a beast and, you know, and try and get back and higher to where you were. And that's the decision that I made after a few days. And ever since then, I've been in fucking beast mode where I've decided I have to get back to where it was. Very interesting. I'll tell you, like, when you have a lot of money, and you know, I didn't come from money, but I made a lot of money. I realized that I had a lot of freedom. Like, and freedom is a very small thing, right? Like, it's a very important thing. It's like if you don't have money and you miss a flight, then it's a big thing because you miss the flight. It's a serious fucking thing. You have to buy. When you have money and you miss a flight, you know you can just fly private. You don't give a shit. So like you have like this freedom to do whatever you want without really caring too much about the consequences. But then in 4 days, my freedom was taken away from me. So from being in a position where I could go on any holiday I want and miss any flight that I want and stay in any hotel that I want, all of a sudden I had the freedom taken away from me. And that's when I realized that actually money is about freedom and that the worst thing that you can do is lose your money because you lose your freedom. It's like going into prison, basically.
You become accustomed to it. It's like the there's like this old Chris Rock sketch where a couple's getting divorced and, you know, she's asking for alimony. She's like, I'm accustomed to this. I'm accustomed to that. You got accustomed to this. I won't say what Chris Rock was accustomed to in that skit, but.
Your Honor, I'm used to this. I'm used to that. I'm accustomed to this. What that got to do with shit? Hey, you got a restaurant. You're accustomed to eating. You leave, you ain't eating no more. They don't owe you a steak.
I have two types of friends in that scenario that you described. One is like, oh, fuck, I've already lost like 95%. I'm just going to hold it to zero. Like, hopefully it bounces back and, you know, just like, please bounce back. And then there's the other kind, which is like, okay, I got like still like $10 million. I lost 100. I got like 5 or 6 left. Let me at least get, did you try to like liquidate at $5 or just kept it to zero? Like, which one of those two were you?
We kept it. We didn't have a choice because remember it was locked up in staking protocols, which were 21 or 20, I don't remember the days, but it was 21 or 28 days locked. And, you know, one of the things we thought when it was collapsing was, you know, maybe take a short. The problem is that the funding, you know, if you're short and it goes the wrong way, you're going to get, we didn't have funding to keep the short open. It was impossible. So we held it.
How about UST? How about on the UST side?
Exited at between 7 and 9 cents on the dollar. So we lost 92% of our value on the UST, and that was it.
Ran, that was a great story. Thank you for sharing. And it does sound like a tough experience. I wonder if you had the thought though, like you were the guy that held Luna from, you said a few cents all the way up to $100-something. Like, did the thought ever occur to you that like, if you're going to be the person that has that conviction, it's almost like a predestined outcome that like you're going to continue to have that conviction and not exit prematurely at the right time. It's sort of like you can't have one side of the coin without the other. That is just who you are as a person that can be so convicted. And that comes with like amazing swings to the upside. But like, because you have the conviction, you're going to get burned occasionally when your investment doesn't pan out.
Look, it was the best lesson of my life for exactly that. So I learned two lessons. Number one, no matter how much conviction you have, the most conviction you have, it should be in a fully diversified portfolio. Like, I have a lot of conviction in a lot of tokens, but I won't let them get to more than 5% of our portfolio under any circumstance. Like, no matter how much I love ETH or Solana or whatever it is, and I do, and I love them all, there's a certain threshold under which we will never, ever, ever let our portfolio go over that level. Number one. Number two, it taught me that no matter how confident you are about a thesis, the haters are the most important people. And you know, that's not the mindset that I had in the previous bull market. In the previous bull market, I was one of the people that said, you know, when you said bad things about Luna, I was one of the guys that fought back and said, you don't know what the hell you're talking about, and that kind of thing. But it taught me, the biggest lesson that it taught me is, no matter how much conviction we have in Bitcoin, or how much conviction you have in Ethereum, or how much conviction you have in Solana, whatever it is, when the haters talk about it, those are the most important tweets that you should be reading. And every time like I read these tweets, I always think to myself, like, there's an account that always fights Solana. I'm not going to mention the account because, you know, you may know him, and Jordy says he knows a lot of people in real life. And Solana is one of my biggest bags. And so what I do whenever he tweets is, I hate his tweets and I think you're so stupid, but I always read them 3 times. And I always say, is this actually a possibility? Like, really, really, really. And I always question my loyalty to the coin and my mindset around the coin. And so I learned those lessons. Hopefully I can tell you for sure I'll never make the same mistakes again, because the smash that I took, even talking about it now, I feel like I'm getting anxiety. That's how bad it was. And I don't wish it on anyone. Like, a loss like that is, man, I walked around for days and I was walking dead. I was the walking dead. Like, I was alive, but there was zero emotion. You could have done anything to me. Nothing would have moved me.
Well, you're back now, which is amazing. So
yeah, you're back to beast mode. Yeah, it's like every day. If it's really hard to price in like the risk of ruin in crypto, because each day that happens where it doesn't go to zero, it feels like, oh yeah, like it's gonna keep going up. But when it actually does go to zero, it's like a 1,000 day of like a Thanksgiving turkey where it just like goes to zero and like the last day. It's you know, you have to enjoy selling, I think, in crypto. You have to learn to enjoy selling.
Exactly. For me, the worst thing is that Luna was the one protocol where it was all or nothing. Like, you know, like Solana can have a glitch and it'll go down for a little bit and the price will come down. But Luna was either the stable coin can be pegged or it's not pegged. Like it's black or white. So, I mean, I left. So that was the first thing. The second thing, which maybe you guys are starting to understand now, but it's the hardest thing that I've ever had to go through. Because I really believed in Luna so much, I told my community how much I believed in Luna. And I had one of the biggest communities in crypto. I had hundreds and thousands of people watching my show every single day. And I really believed in Luna. And I kept telling them how much I believe in Luna. And therefore, they all got into Luna. And when the train wreck happened, I got wiped out. But I had to deal with probably hundreds of thousands of other people that I felt responsible for to a certain degree of, you know, telling them how I felt so good about Luna. And they got wrecked. And the amount of hate that I had to deal with was, you can't even imagine it. So not only was I dealing with my own loss, but I was dealing with hate, public hate. I was dealing with guilt, emotion, which is like, it's a very tough thing. And it made me realize the power that you have in our position and how to be responsible about that power and how to, you know, be very balanced in your coverage, even if you love something. Like, you got to be very balanced in your coverage because you have a responsibility. Because even you guys, you're a smaller channel, but you have to be very balanced in your coverage because what you say actually influences what people do. And I think all too often we overestimate how much research these people are going to do. And, you know, they don't do the research. They just listen to three people or four people talk and they'll end up buying because Jordy mentioned it on the show. You know, to them, every coin is a meme. Let's put it that way. Like, to them, the difference between a meme and Ethereum, it's, you know, if Jordy said Ethereum, it's got to be Ethereum.
I mean, we might be a small channel, Ran, but we punch above our weight. And I think we have listeners like you. We have the big weight listeners. So I think we still have some influence. You're right. Let's wrap up with Past of the Week. It's been a really cool episode. It's actually like it's great to hear these stories. And actually, I remember I don't know if you remember this, Ran. I recorded a show with you just a couple days after Luna. It was like me, you, and Mashinsky, I think, and a couple other people, but I still remember Mashinsky because he was coming on and a little bit sociopathic. You know, he was, you know, talking about how well things are going for Celsius. And it was maybe like a week before it started to come out that was also, you know, part of the collapsed companies of the cycle. Do you have any memories of that episode?
I do. And I must say, I'm very disappointed by Alex Mashinsky. Was one of the people that I was very disappointed about by. And that's because he always came across as like this true champion fighting for the industry and for against the banks. And, you know, ultimately, I think that what took him down, obviously the Luna collapse took him down, but like people like Dylan Leclerc, who were actually studying the on-chain, came at him and, you know, and said, look, you know, there's a problem here and you're not being transparent about the problem. So, yeah, I mean, look, I'm glad that old bear market is behind us. I learned a lot. You know, I had Sam Bankman-Fried on my show multiple times. And at the time we thought he was the messiah. I mean, when Sam Bankman-Fried spoke, I mean, I want to remind you something. In the previous bull market, when a company used to come to us and say, look, Alameda invested, to us, that was like, look, you know, we got to get in. Alameda's in. You know, and we're not the only investors that thought like that. And it turns out that they had the worst DD process out of anyone, actually. Like, they did nothing, you know, like. So I'm glad that bull market's behind us. I think we've all learned a lot. I think we're much more responsible now. We're much stronger now. The portfolios are much better now. But yeah, Jordy, I remember that.
Cool. Well, let's go to Pasta of the Week. Justin, you want to kick us off?
Yeah, absolutely. I wanted to highlight Taiki's tweet here, actually. The lads meet in real life. So unfortunately, Jordy wasn't there. I guess you were in Dubai, but in New York, Taiki hosted a little meetup for his community and the Steady Lads community as well. And so we got to meet Thicky in person for the first time. Unfortunately, he's not here today, but we had a great time meeting him. Truly a wholesome guy. We got to see him in action trading live at the bar with us, which was a great time.
Too cool for name tags. You guys have the name tag. He's like, I don't need one. I'm Thicky, yo. Let's go.
I mean, he's a pretty boy. What would you expect? You know, look at him. Look at that smile.
Dude, there are like a few Thicky stands for sure.
A lot of fans.
They saw Thicky. It's funny because I think he was like trading and he like longed Bitcoin and it went down and he was like at the corner of the bar, just like looking at his screen. I thought that was kind of funny. It's like Thicky's always trading. He's probably trading right now. It's probably.
So we're having drinks with our great co-host Sticky, and I guess some news came through. He was long Bitcoin, and I guess his position's underwater now. And now we have Sticky in the corner trying to get out of his Bitcoin long position. He may or may not be trapped. I'll have to update you guys on the pod.
He's underwater.
But that's my pasta of the week, more wholesome. I have a couple other ones, but they're just not that funny. I know I'm going to get blown out by you guys, and I don't want to embarrass myself anymore.
Taiki, how about you? What do you have?
Yeah, so this one is from Gort, everyone's favorite character. So this is Brian Johnson. He reduced his cortisol levels by nearly 50% and added an estimated 10 years to his life. His trick? He stopped asking where the yield comes from. This t-shirt says, don't die.
That's pretty good.
It's like 90% of issues in crypto, like just don't ask where the yield comes from. And then, you know, like you can live stress-free. Like once you start looking into where the yield comes from, you're always stressed. You know, you're like fuck, like these points. It's
yeah, Gord is underrepresented on Pasta of the Week. We should get him more often on there because he really gets bangers. Like this is a solid.
She gets bangers.
No, it's a dude.
He has a podcast now, so we can hear his voice. Ran, do you have a pasta?
I do. So my pasta is Size Chad. He says he references the H-Bar BlackRock partnership, which was announced this week. And, you know, the H-Bar price went up by like 100% or more and came straight back down. And I think the reason for me why it is like he says, if I was H-Bar, I would have doubled down and said the partnership is real. And that BlackRock is lying. Like when you tell everyone that you shagged some chick when you didn't, and it gets back to her, never admit that you didn't and make it even more raunchy each time that it brought it up. And the reason why I laugh at this is because I've heard of H-Bar partnerships, I think ever since H-Bar was launching crypto. And the only thing I haven't seen is execution. Like, and to me, like the H-Bar is like, to me, becoming very much a meme, so to speak.
You know, this is like massive reversions have become more and more frequent. And it seems like the word BlackRock, if you can just get the word BlackRock in a sentence, you get these effects. And it lasted for a few hours at least, so they got some fun out of it. So to wrap up Pasta of the Week, I found one of those videos with Justin with a particularly British accent. Let's try it. Listen a few seconds of this.
I believe the evolution of human beings has never been particularly peaceful. We might perceive a sense of relative peace due to our existence in a relatively stable and united environment. Let me provide an illustration. I have multiple acquaintances. On a certain day, I transmitted a text message to them, informing about the progress of our collaboration with their company. The recipient of the message is also a business person. Also, a boss of an external company.
It's pretty good how like the dubbing is done. I would say that he immediately. It's almost as good as these like AI videos. I don't know if you guys have been seeing like the AI lip syncing videos.
Yeah, this is like we're like 30 seconds in, and he says nothing of substance. Like I got nothing out of that. He's just like I'm talking to some person from a different company, my acquaintance. We were talking from a different company. Like, what is he trying to get at here?
I think it's a British accent. It makes you sound smart no matter what you say. So
that's true.
I must tell you, like speaking of those AI voices, like there's a scam going around where the guy's basically got my voice on an AI down to it's got my real voice, and people are sending me voice notes saying, "Hey, but you said this." I was like, "I didn't say anything like this." And it's a serious thing now that scammers in crypto actually can get your voice, and they can clone your voice, and they can say whatever they want to say in your voice.
It's the bull case for WorldCoin.
there's a video a couple of days ago where there's like a 40-year-old man with AI changing his face to like a cute girl, and he's just sort of like doing the normal like, you know, influencer stuff as a girl. And there was some comment saying, you know, this is the cycle of life. The person who's consuming the content starts to make the content. So the simp becomes the simpy. Ran, I think you had a very solid pasta. So we will. I think you deserve the pasta of the week. So congratulations!
Wow, that's quite an honor. I mean, my first appearance here, and I get the pasta of the week. Thank you.
It was very solid, and good job to Size Chat for that one. That was very strong. Well, thanks so much for coming. Hopefully, everybody got something, and we'll see you guys next time.
Thank you for having me, guys. It's been a great honor. Thank you.